Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Our democracy is what is at stake. The president leaves us no choice but to act because he is trying to corrupt once again the election for his own benefit. The president has engaged in abuse of power, undermining our national security and jeopardizing the integrity of our elections. His actions are in defiance of the vision of our founders and the oath of office that he takes to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Sadly, but with confidence and humility, with allegiance to our founders and a heart full of love for America, today I am asking our chairman to proceed with articles of impeachment. I commend our committee chairs and our members for their somber approach to actions which I wish the president had not made necessary.
Oh, hell, folks, it's on. That is the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, instructing the House Judiciary Committee to proceed with articles of impeachment. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. Where do we go from here? Well, I think we now have a clue from the Speaker of the House. The Democrats are really ready to push this thing down the road. We're so glad you can be a part of what I think will be not just an important conversation, but a smart, good conversation around all that's happened this week with the law professors showing up at the Judiciary Committee and testifying to what happens next as this thing moves towards the Senate. And none other than Richard Painter, who is the S. Walter Ritchie Professor of Corporate Law at the University of Minnesota. He was the vice chair of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. And from 2005 to 2007, Mr. Painter was the chief White House ethics lawyer in the George W. Bush administration. He has his upcoming book coming out, American Hero, The History of the Destruction of the Rule of Law and Why Trump is the Worst Offender. Welcome, Richard, to the podcast, man.
Well, thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me. It's a tough week.
It's a sobering week in so many ways. And I one of the things that I've tried to say when I've been on air and on Twitter and any place where, and certainly on this platform, the strength of for a lot of people out here is knowledge and information. Get out of your silos, folks. Get out of the talking circles where you hear the same thing repeated over and over again, and really understand civically what's happening here, constitutionally why this is important, politically, yes, all of the ramifications. And that's what I wanted to have you on today, Richard, because I think you can help us contextualize and understand not just the politics of this, but the sobriety that's required to go through this process and the importance of it. What was your take when you heard the speaker finally say, hey, yeah, we're moving forward and we're now preparing articles of impeachment?
Well, first and foremost, the speaker is correct that this is not a partisan political issue. This isn't about her disagreements with Donald Trump on core political issues.
Right.
This is not about Democrats versus Republicans. And you and I both know that the Republican Party did not used to stand for the values of Donald Trump.
Right.
And that Donald Trump's presidency, his candidacy in 2016, and then his presidency has been an extreme departure from the American values espoused by both of our major political parties, despite our disagreements on issues. And this president has clearly committed high crimes and misdemeanors. Let's just forget about the misdemeanors part and focus on the high crimes of bribery and extortion with respect to Ukraine, obstruction of justice of the Russia investigation, obstruction of Congress that's ignoring subpoenas, refusing to allow people to testify, and taking emoluments, foreign government payoffs in violation of the Constitution. The list goes on and on. And we throw that on top of the rabid attacks on the press, on religious minorities, and the racism of this administration. And it is an unmitigated disaster. So we need to do something, and the articles of impeachment from the House of Representatives are a very important first step.
How did you assess what you heard yesterday, and what should we take away? Look, we're not constitutional lawyers like the gentleman and the woman who was there, Professor Pamela Carlin, and we haven't been on the ethical curve of this as you have serving in the administration in the past. What should we take away from this? A lot of this kind of can float over the heads of people. You just began to break that down a little bit. Okay, so these are the elements that are really important to think about here, the bribery, et cetera. How should the American people really kind of be reading all of this right now and sort of absorbing the mountains of evidence and pages of documents that we see being thrown about right now?
Well, focus on the big picture, the obvious facts. This is not a matter that requires constitutional law experts. I'm not sure much of that testimony yesterday was even needed. It was fun to watch, and some of it was better than others, and I'm happy to talk about the different professors there. But the bottom line is that it's obvious what's going on here. There's hundreds of millions of dollars of military aid that Ukraine needs in order to preserve its independence and to fight back rebels who are backed by the Russian government. And the question there is whether Ukraine is going to once again become part of the Russian Empire as it existed before the Russian Revolution and during the USSR period, or whether Ukraine will be independent. And the United States, Republican and Democratic administrations, has stood up for the independence of Ukraine ever since the breakdown of the Iron Curtain in the 1990s. That military aid is critically important. What does Donald Trump do? He says, well, I'm not giving it to you. I'm not giving it to you unless you go and investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden on a theory that somehow they're committing corrupt acts in Ukraine. There's no evidence for that. And then second, go investigate people in Ukraine who supposedly were interfering in the 2016 elections in favor of Hillary Clinton, which didn't happen. It was the Russians who interfered in the election in favor of Donald Trump. So in other words, if you don't do these things for my political campaign, to support my political campaign for president of the United States, perform these acts of value to my political campaign, I'm not giving you the aid. Well, that's extortion. That's bribery. He's soliciting something of value for his political campaign in return for an official act of the United States government of releasing the aid that Ukraine desperately needs. It is a dangerous act. He's around with the global security, and he's doing it in order to benefit his campaign. Clearly impeachable, on top of what he obviously with the Russia investigation. We all know about his obstruction of justice in that investigation, and it's all in part two of the Mueller report. So he was in impeachment territory even before the Ukraine thing blew up.
So, you know, and I've heard one of the best ways to sort of explain and contextualize what the president did was I heard one of the I think it may have been Professor Carlin or Dr. Carlin that kind of touched on it an example. But I've heard subsequently some better examples. And the one that I really latched on to was if you're the mayor of a coastal city, off in Florida or Louisiana, Mississippi, and you're ravaged by a hurricane, and the governor, of course, helps provide aid to you, so forth, and as they get it from the feds, et cetera. And in your conversation and going seeking that help from the governor, the governor says to you, yeah, be happy. Yeah, we're happy to get you the aid you need, but I need a favor, though. I need you to, circulate some stuff about one of my political opponents that's coming up in the next gubernatorial election. He lives in your district. You know him. I need you to help me out. Otherwise, we're good. That to me makes, and everyone viscerally responds to that like, oh my God, no, you can't do that. And yet somehow, we got Republicans sitting in important positions on Capitol Hill, House and Senate, Republicans around the country in various roles and capacities saying, oh no, that's not a problem, that the president of the United States basically said to the president of Ukraine in the middle of dealing with military problems and struggles and fights with Russia, who's coming to the U.S. for help and aid, says to him, yeah, I understand you need all of this, but I need a favor, though. And everyone goes, well, that's the normal course. The Mulvaney said, we do that all the time. No, we don't. How do people not get that? Why is there such a disconnect from scenario A, where a governor putting pressure on a mayor or the president even putting pressure on the governor to get aid to the state saying, hey, I'd be happy to help you, but my political rival I need some help with, they see that as offensive. But when it's President Trump doing it to the president of Ukraine, they're like, well, that seems to make a lot of sense. It makes no sense.
It's amazing that this type of extortion could be tolerated. And I will tell you, that example is really very similar to what I grew up with in Central Illinois. When I grew up in Illinois, mm-hmm. We hated the Democratic Party machine up in Chicago run by the old Mayor Dale. Not only was a horrible racist, but he would do exactly that type of thing. It was, you're not getting aid for your neighborhood in Chicago unless you support the Daily Machine politically. Right. And they'd stand outside the polling booth seeing who showed up to vote and who didn't. And it was a one-party town. And down in Central Illinois, that's one reason I became a Republican when I was growing up there and I went back to teaching the University of Illinois, is we hated that. Now, of course, we had a corruption of the Republican Party in Illinois, too. I don't want to say they were blameless, but
right.
We once had two governors serving their term concurrently in the federal penitentiary, two separate parties there. But bottom line is, that kind of thing is what Americans hate. To have that type of machine politics elevated to the White House, and now our national security is jeopardized, global security is implicated. This is extremely dangerous, because as bad as Mayor Daley and all the machine politicians were in the old days, they weren't doing anything to undermine our national security.
Right.
They were not extorting our allies. They might be extorting some shop owner in South Chicago or something, but they wouldn't be extorting an American ally and doing this with our foreign policy. It's extremely dangerous. It's much more dangerous than anything Nixon ever did. And I'm amazed to see Republicans, simply because Donald Trump is a Republican, stand up for it and forget that the vast majority of experienced Republican office holders didn't want Donald Trump to get the nomination.
Right.
They knew that this guy was going to be a disaster case.
And yet they continue to perpetuate the disaster. And that it is the narrative of narratives that I think has to be digested, understood at some point. It's hard to do now, real time, when you look at a Lindsey Graham or a John Kennedy of Louisiana, who last week continued to perpetuate the Putin-led propaganda that Ukraine was actually the culprit in 2016. Not us, not little old Russia. Oh, no, we would never do something like that. And yet 17 intelligence agencies across the spectrum says otherwise, and this numbnut stands up and says, I don't believe it. The Russians may have, but we know Ukraine did. No, you don't know that. There is no evidence, and yet they continue to perpetuate that. And it's so frustrating to sort of contextualize and try to understand what the hell is making these folks say this. Donald Trump was a nobody politically within the GOP. I know that firsthand. All right. And he was not even, at the time I was national chairman, he was not a Republican. He was a Democrat. Okay. And yet we act as if he's the greatest thing ever to the party. I mean, there's a poll out, Richard, that has Republicans ranking him as a better president than Abraham friggin' Lincoln. And I'm like, you people are high.
It's amazing. Well, the first thing is he's driven a lot of people for the Republican Party, so you're getting a smaller and smaller percentage.
Smaller sample. Good point.
Willing to describe themselves as Republicans. The second problem is he has exacerbated a trend that unfortunately we've had in the Republican Party over several decades of attracting people who in the old days we used to call Dixiecrats.
Right.
Were motivated by racial animosity and a small set of social issues who don't really embrace a free enterprise platform of the Republican Party and certainly don't embrace the longstanding tradition in the Republican Party before Donald Trump of standing up to the Russians. I mean, Ronald Reagan would be vomiting right now.
Oh, my gosh,
to watch this on the television.
Oh,
It's amazing. And Richard Nixon, as I said, he was a crook. We ought to admit that he was a crook, but at least he was our crook. He wasn't in with the KGB.
Well put. He was our crook. We didn't have to worry about him going and swinging with the other side. That's for sure.
It's amazing. It's amazing that we've got this going on.
So
it's going to destroy the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if they don't think seriously, but this is where the decision's really going to be made in the Senate. Are you going to get 20 Republican senators who are going to wake up, realize how awful this was? They know they didn't support him for the nomination in 2016, and just say, you know, let's just go with Mike Pence and get him out of there. Do what they did with Nixon back in 74.
So you raise,
walk over the White House and tell him to pack his bag.
You raise an interesting point, Richard, and it's one that a lot of people are kind of, you know, mixed on, and maybe you can help clarify. So you have this argument, and I think it's a legitimate one. I don't think it's misplaced at all, but some things I think are a greater consideration. So the argument goes, well, wait a minute. We are now 10 months out from a presidential election, 11 months out from a presidential election. Why would we go through this process? Why ring the country through this this narrative of impeachment when the voters can go to the polls and impeach him, okay, in quotation marks, by unelecting him in 2020. I have my own estimation of that argument and why it's not as valid as some would claim it is. What do you think about that argument that says, why are we doing this? The voters get to vote in 11 months anyway. Let them do it.
Well, first and foremost, this corruption is extremely dangerous for our national security. This is just not petty corruption. We're not talking about President Leiter or oath about sex with a White House intern or something like that.
Right.
We're talking about very dangerous conduct in connection with our national security. Second, this president is an extreme narcissist. Just look at his Twitter feed, listen to what George Conway, my law school classmate George Conway, a great guy, he has to say about Trump, who unfortunately his wife works for, Kellyanne there. But the bottom line is everyone is in quite firm agreement that this man is an extreme narcissist. Now, you got an extreme narcissist in control of nuclear weapons, the ability to destroy the human civilization in about 20 minutes. That is not a situation that we could tolerate. He also should be removed under the 25th Amendment of the Constitution because of his mental health. But we don't have the mechanisms in place to do that. We do have impeachment. He's going to use his power of the Republican Party to install himself, give himself the nomination. He controls all the fundraising, so he can pull money out from anybody doesn't support him.
Right.
And then you're going to have a choice between a completely incompetent president who has mental health issues, who is also guilty of crimes, high crimes in office, and whoever the Democrats want to nominate. That's not a good situation. Americans should be able to choose between two mentally stable, competent people. And Mike Pence is extremely conservative. I don't agree with him on everything. He is somewhat tainted by the Ukraine situation, but not as much as Donald Trump. And if you had a choice between Pence and maybe Elizabeth Warren or Biden or whatever.
Pence, a heartbeat.
Yeah, that's a real choice. Right. I mean, people would choose based on issues and not have to worry about, do you have a president who is going to blow everything up because he feels insulted? This is a very, very dangerous situation. He's got to go. Trump's got to go.
So we're going to take a quick break because I got some sponsors now to then give them a chance to play in the playground for a little bit. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll finish up some great conversation with Richard Painter. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Richard, you had yesterday, you had the House Judiciary Committee gavel in four law professors. From a variety of schools. So it was an interesting mix. You had Noah Feldman from Harvard Law School, Pamela Carlin of Stanford University, Michael Gerhardt of the University of North Carolina, and Jonathan Turley, who a lot of us know in this region, from George Washington University Law School. The former three were invited by the Democrats, Jonathan Turley by the Republicans. There was a number of interesting moments, and two of them I want to get to about. The first was with Jonathan Turley, where he talked about executive power, and he was referencing at that point how executive power played out in the 1990s. Just listen to a little bit of what he had to say.
Executive power exhibits the same physical properties as a gas in a confined space. When you expand the space, the gas will fill the space. You should not be misled. Your decision will define executive power and authority. If you decide that certain acts do not rise to impeachable offenses, you will expand the space for executive conduct. And we will have to live with that expansion.
So he was talking about that expansion of executive power, and that was from the Clinton impeachment back in the 1990s. What do you think of that idea? Which it was kind of interesting to hear him talk about that a little bit yesterday, and I think some folks tried to put him back in, you know, push back on him a little bit on that. But what did you think of what he had to say and speaking against impeachment, which seemed to go counter to this idea of expanding executive power?
Well, it's completely inconsistent. He takes completely inconsistent positions. And he's been doing this for decades. He says he's a politically more of a liberal. And perhaps he is, but he likes to get on TV a lot. His first venture getting on TV was over litigation over Area 51, where they supposedly have all sorts of top secret things going on and rumors of UFOs. And then after the Area 51 thing, we came to the Clinton impeachment. And so he could get on TV being the liberal professor who thought that Bill Clinton somehow ought to be impeached. And so what we're talking about, expansion of executive power, apparently is the power of President Clinton to, have sex with a White House intern and lie about it under oath. And that's wrong. Clinton should have done it. And we could debate about whether that's impeachable or more practical thing probably would have been censure. But bottom line is, Turley could get himself on TV doing that. And he certainly was. And the Republicans had a field day with that back in 98. Well, then he continued that in the Obama years, going after President Obama for executive power. Same line about abuse of executive power. But then once again, getting a lot of support from right-wing Republicans, even though he says he's not one. And now with Trump, he's just completely flipped over, and he's advocating very broad executive power and saying that we can't impeach Trump, that this is an abuse of power to impeach Trump. Well, I'm with Michael Gerhardt and the others who say that, you know, if this is not impeachable, what Donald Trump did, then nothing's impeachable. We might as well not have the impeachment clause in the Constitution.
Yeah,
and so Turley's full of baloney. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Well, I admire him, and I've followed him, and have been on set with him in the past, and you're right. I was kind of a little bit sort of scratching my head at various times because there was a higher level of inconsistency, particularly with respect to this issue of abuse of power and executive power specifically. And it was interesting that Pamela Carlin pushed on that button a little bit. Here's what she had to say about this whole idea of abuse.
As President John Kennedy declared, the right to vote in a free American election is the most powerful and precious right in the world. But our elections become less free when they are distorted by foreign interference. What happened in 2016 was bad enough. There is widespread agreement that Russian operatives intervened to manipulate our political process. But that distortion is magnified if a sitting president abuses the powers of his office actually to invite foreign intervention. To see why, imagine living in a part of Louisiana or Texas that's prone to devastating hurricanes and flooding. What would you think if you lived there and your governor asked for a meeting with the president to discuss getting disaster aid that Congress has provided for? What would you think if that president said, I would like you to do us a favor. I'll meet with you and I'll send the disaster relief once you brand my opponent a criminal. Wouldn't you know in your gut that such a president had abused his office?
And that goes to the point that we were making earlier that, you know, when you juxtapose that about with Turley, who's sitting here talking about, you know, the way he was yesterday, that this whole process, you know, he didn't see any abuse. He didn't see the president stepping out beyond the bounds of his office. I thought she contextualized that very well, number one, but it really did draw, I thought, into stark relief this whole idea of what that abuse actually was and what it looked like and how it broke down with people. And it was amazing to me still when you had members of the Republican Party sitting on the dais who just completely blew past that and wanted to argue process. This is not about process. You can dance on that pinhead all day long, but the truth of the matter is you have hardened facts that have been delivered by the likes of Fiona Hill and Ambassador Sondland, and now these professors who are giving you the constitutional foundation to support those facts. And yet the administration and folks still sort of go, no, this there's no abuse here. I just don't see how that plays out and how the American people can digest it otherwise. But apparently some do.
Well, this is extremely dangerous when it spills over to our foreign policy. Extremely dangerous. Imagine President Roosevelt, when he had approached a chancellor of Germany, Adolf Hitler, and said, look, we won't do the lend-lease deal with the British. We're helping the British get some ships and supplies. Is before the United States got into World War II. We won't do the lend-lease deal with the British. I'll cut Churchill off. I'll leave him hanging. If you'll do something to help me with the re-election campaign.
Right.
You'll try to make sure the German-Americans come out for Roosevelt. What if FDR had done that and gotten away with it? He wouldn't have wanted to do it. But if we'd had a president that did that in 1940, we'd be speaking German right now. This is extremely dangerous. And to have someone who is willing to first use Russia to win the 2016 election, obstruct justice in the Mueller investigation, attack Robert Mueller and other loyal Americans who are seeking to defend the integrity of our election system. And then the very same day that Robert Mueller gave his testimony in front of Congress, Trump says, I'm absolved. And he goes out and gets on the phone with the president of Ukraine. And he's doing this extortion racket to win the 2020 election. This is the epitome of criminal conduct in the White House.
So you and along with a lot of others have set both a legal as well as a constitutional foundation to kind of move forward with impeachment. And the conventional wisdom is, And it was laughable when I would hear Republicans yesterday say, well, you know, the Democrats have already predetermined the outcome. I was like, and you haven't? you guys have not even participated in the process, number one. And number two, to the extent that it gets to the Senate, you've already got Lindsey Graham saying, I'm not even going to look at any of this. I'm not even going to read the documents. So that raises the question, what happens when this gets to the Senate? What's the politics of the Senate here? It's less in Nancy Pelosi's hands at that point. Chuck Schumer is the Democrat on point. Mitch McConnell, the Republican. Republicans have the majority. McConnell has a number of options, one of which would include not even holding a trial, but just basically saying there's not enough evidence to go forward with the trial. I think he'll be hard-pressed to do that. But that is an option. Hold a trial, and of course, with the majority vote that they have, hold their Senate majority at bay to prevent at least 20 of them from peeling off. So, what's your assessment of the play once it gets across the street?
Well, right now, all the Republicans are talking as if they're solidly behind Donald Trump, and that's the way people often talk when there's someone who abuses their power in office, like Donald Trump, a dictator, anyone else. If there's going to be a coup against the dictator, people aren't going around blabbing about and saying maybe yes, maybe no. In a real dictatorship, those people end up in jail who talk about a coup. In the United States, all that would happen is Donald Trump would cut off their campaign cash and make sure there's a primary opponent to take them out. And we already have two Republican senators to Flake and Corker, who exactly that happened to, and they had to decide not to run again because they were not willing to stand up and support Donald Trump. Now, that being said, we have no idea what's going on with the senators behind closed doors. And there are a lot of very unhappy Republicans who never wanted Trump to get the nomination, who saw him as a complete disaster in 2016, and many who actually wish that he had lost in 2016, knowing that his presidency would destroy the Republican Party. And we don't know what's going to happen, because when the American people see more and more of this evidence, what we're going to find is that the Republican senators might refuse to convict, but everybody's going to know what's going on. It's like an all-white jury in Mississippi refusing to indict, you know,
convict the Klan. Okay, so can I pause you right there, Richard? I had that very same thought, and I thought I was the only one, but that is the perfect analogy here, is that, you know, all-white Southern jury back in the 1950s with the guy who got caught with the lynching rope in his hand, and you know, everybody in the room knows what the deal is. They know he did it. Mm-hmm. And yet, the jurors are sitting there going, well,
he's going to walk.
Right.
And that's basically the, if they do that and they let him off the hook with this evidence so overwhelming, the voters are going to know that.
Yeah.
And the voters are going to go there and not only sink the Republican presidential ticket, but sink a whole bunch of senators.
That's the thing.
It'd be a disaster for the GOP.
No, that is the crux of this. This party leadership right now has got so much Trump on the brain. They only see one person. They only see him. And they're afraid of this cadre of not even at this point, I don't even consider them Republicans. I think what we see is the Dixiecrats, as you referenced earlier, have just reared their ugly heads from the 1960s. From the Southern strategy, the leftover remnants of that, that's all kind of moshed pit into this thing that now calls itself the base of the party. But that's not who these people are at the end of the day. And yet these elected officials are deathly afraid of them. But at the end of it, when it's all said and done, Richard, where do you go when the rest of the voters in your congressional district or your state look at your silence, your capitulation, your acquiescence to what has occurred in this matter, culminating, if you're a United States senator, in sitting on your hands when you know the evidence screams out for justice, and you don't think that the voters are going to go, you know what, you don't deserve that seat any longer?
I think that's what's going to happen if the Republicans support Donald Trump. And that's why I think there is a good chance. We're not going to get any evidence of it. No, there'd be no him. But the 20 Republican senators are going to get together and pull the plug and do the calculation and just say, look, Pence, Mike Pence is actually more conservative on the social issues and actually more believable on the social issues.
Right.
He says one marries one man and one woman. At least he's got one woman there, and you don't have to worry about right. 45 sexual assault allegations.
Or two former wives. Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And all the other nonsense. And you don't have to worry as much, at least. I mean, Mike Pence, I think, wasn't in with the Russians before he got wound up with Donald Trump. I mean, I don't know what's happened since then. But the point is that it's not as if you're going to ditch Donald Trump and put in a liberal Republican. You're going to put in someone who appeals to the base as well. I think that, yes, Mike Pence doesn't appeal to the Klansman, maybe is not as much, because he doesn't go out and say as many racist things as,
right.
as Donald Trump. He doesn't appeal to the bikers and the tough boys. But at the end of the day, that's a small percentage of the electorate. I mean, the evangelicals.
And we don't want that vote anyway. So we don't
yeah,
want that
exactly.
vote. I don't want that vote. Right.
Yeah, we don't need the Klansmen to win an election, for crying out loud. That's
what
the problem with the Democrat Party. The Democratic Party depended on too many of those people to win elections in the old days. And you know, the George Wallace types. And
right.
So the bottom line is that, you know, the evangelical voters would probably feel a lot happier with Pence, because they wouldn't have to think of themselves as complete hypocrites. You know, evangelical supporting Donald Trump is a joke.
Yeah, I've had my rants with about the evangelicals. We'll move on from that one.
Oh, it's a circus. It's a circus. We got Paula White down there in the White House, this preacher from Florida. She runs around. She's selling merchandise and she's basically running a Ponzi scheme.
Of course.
In the name of the Lord there.
Of course.
I think that's a bit much.
Oh, my God. It's absolutely maddening. Absolutely maddening. So how easily can the Democrats screw this thing up once it gets to the Senate? I think they've managed expectations fairly well in the House. Nadler had his moments yesterday where he looked a little bit, you know, the process is, you know, the sort of the, you know, the rules that you've got to keep straight in front of you when they're coming at you saying, oh, point of order, you know, Mr. Chairman, this. Okay, I got that. But by and large, managed that very well. Schiff was very expert in dealing with House intelligence. Judiciary, I thought, by and large, went smoothly. And so that, I think that gave Nancy the sort of the credibility and the confidence to sort of go out and say what she said in moving forward. It goes to the Senate. How do Schumer and the Democrats, knowing they're 20 down, all right? So they're 20 points down. It's fourth quarter, the beginning of the fourth quarter, middle of the fourth quarter. And where do you think they go? How do they manage that?
Well, first of all, make sure it doesn't appear to be partisan, that this is about the Constitution. It's not about the political issues.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't about disagreements on immigration or disagreements on trade or anything like that.
Right.
This is about the Constitution and a grave threat to our national security because of the conduct of Donald Trump. Second, well, you know, there is some evidence that Mike Pence has been involved with the Ukraine thing. Fact of the matter is that I think Democrats need to make it clear that, you know, they aren't going to impeach him too at this juncture. They're going to let him, if he were to become president, run on the Republican ticket, and they'd run on the issues. And that would be a clean race on the issues. Two very different candidates, but at least we wouldn't have to worry about a candidate who, you know, the president was psychologically disabled and a criminal. So the point is, this is not about partisan politics, not about Republicans versus Democrats. It's not about people trying to tarnish the Republican Party and the history of the Republican Party. Unfortunately, because of our campaign finance system, where the president is the head of the party, raises so much money, has control over so much money, Donald Trump now dominates the Republican Party. But this isn't the history of the Republican Party. Democrats need to make it very clear. This is not partisan. This is about a man who Republicans didn't want to win the nomination. and who has been a terrible president and is a threat to our national security, is downright dangerous. He needs to go.
That he does. That he does. And so, Richard, this is the last little thing I got. I just want to get your thoughts on. So we've talked about the global role that the president plays typically and traditionally. That's kind of been messed up under Trump. And it was never more pronounced than watching our NATO allies, Canada, the United Kingdom, and France, standing in a little circle, a little huddle, mocking the president of the United States, talking about how his staff's jaw was dropping as he's making all these pronouncements that clearly of stuff they didn't know about. For example, bringing the G7 to Maryland next year instead of Mar-a-Lago, thank goodness, but to Maryland at Camp David. What does that say about the state of things, not just domestically but globally, in terms of how our allies are coming to view and work with this president, and what that may mean with national security, big national securities on the line, issues on the line going into next year?
Bottom line is that the so-called leader of the free world is now the laughingstock of the free world. And this is making dictators around the world happy. Everyone from Vladimir Putin to the Saudi Arabian regime, every other dictator, North Korea. North Korea knows they can play us. They can keep building those missiles so long as they stroke Donald Trump's ego,
right,
and tell him he's got a deal and say something bad about Joe Biden. Every dictator in the world knows they can play us. That our president is a laughingstock, not only the free world, but the entire world. It's an extremely dangerous situation, and that's what we need to put someone else in there right away, have another Republican president. It would be Mike Pence. Figure out who they're going to nominate for the GOP, have an election in 2020, but we need to get Trump out of there.
Well, the irony is that when he ran for president, Trump claimed that America was the laughing stock of the world under Obama. There was never any evidence of that. But under his administration, we have proof positive. We have the videotape. So I appreciate you, man. Richard Painter, S. Walter Ritchie, Professor of Corporate Law at the University of Minnesota. Thank you so much. He's got his book. It's going to be coming out. We want to get you back when the book hits the shelves.
American Nero.
American Nero, the history of the destruction of the rule of law and why Trump is the worst offender. When is it out?
It's coming out in March, February or March. My co-author is Peter Gollenbach. He's the author of a dozen or so New York Times bestsellers. And our front cover there has the bust there of the emperor. It looks like the Emperor Nero. Nope, it is a bust of Donald Trump. Yes, and Nero was an awful narcissist, but Trump is a lot more dangerous.
Well, there it is. We look forward to coming out and getting you back to talk about it when it hits the shelves. Richard Painter, thank you so much for being on the podcast, man.
Thank you very much, Michael.
All right, folks, that does it for this episode. So glad you could be a part of it. Thank you for the downloads. We love you for doing that. Stay tuned. Of course, you know you can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcasts on. Check you out next time. You guys have a great one. Take care.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.